We talked about aflatoxins before, and certainly my job when I was in Office of Regulatory Affairs, we dealt with so many different things, but aflatoxins came back too. And aflatoxins are clearly fall into that sort of unavoidable contaminant category. And in ORA, because I was not kind of strictured by just dealing with animal feed type issues like I dealt with in the Bureau of Veterinary Medicine, suddenly I was dealing directly with human foods as well as animal feeds, and I and dealt with a whole bunch of other stuff too, but mainly was looking at food feed issues. Aflatoxins reared their ugly little heads any number of times, and aflatoxins, because they occur in a lot of different grain products, they also occur in pumpkin seeds and other things, but aflatoxins are a toxin that are produced by Aspergillus flavus. And Aspergillus flavus is a mold, so it grows where most molds would grow in hot and moist conditions. Aspergillus flavus is considered a mycotoxin, which means a mold toxin. And there are many thousands of mold toxins that are toxic to humans and other animals. But Aspergillus flavus is found in America's favorite crop, which is corn. And corn is grown all over the U.S., but we think of it mainly in the South, I think, and certainly that's where aflatoxins are primarily found in the corn supply. And they're primarily found where there's an early summer, moist conditions. And what happened, I think, to cause a higher incidence or higher levels of aflatoxins is there was a change, just like occurred with the heptachlor situation. There was a change in the way corn was grown. Corn used to be grown with rows, I think, about 3 feet apart, and they decided that they could have increased agricultural efficiency, and the equipment could still, you know, get down the fields and everything if they grow it like 2.5 feet apart or something like that. And what that did was it gave you more of an umbrella of all the foliage over the ground, so when you had the early morning mist and the moisture would rise, you get these higher moisture levels and you get more mold on the ears of corn, and that's where the aflatoxin occurs, in the corn itself. It was not a concern on the plant. We're not talking about harvesting the plant for animal feed. We're talking about the corn itself. And it didn't really occur that much in corn, the sweet corn that we eat, like corn on the cob. This was mainly the hard corn that you use for animal feed. So you would get aflatoxin occurring, well, you get the Aspergillus growing, and then the conditions were perfect for the toxin production. And you didn't need very much of it. The nature of aflatoxin is that a very small amount of it is enough to cause some pretty evil effects. And it is toxic to the liver, so it's a hepatotoxin. It can, I believe it can cause cancer over time. And it is toxic to animals. However, we were having a number of bad crop years. The action level for aflatoxins was 20 parts per million in corn. The level in milk was oh, you may need to check this, was 0.5, I think, parts per billion in milk. And there were a fair number of studies that were coming out that showed that ruminant animals could handle, because, you know, of the four stomachs and they, the fact that they were ruminants, they could detoxify the aflatoxin in the rumen. And so the question was, can we feed it to ruminant animals? Can we take this bad corn that has been tested and found to have higher levels, you know, of 100 parts per billion, 400 parts per billion, and feed it to dairy cows or feedlot animals or sheep or goats,
somebody,
and then make use of this this corn and not just have to throw it away, which is having an enormous economic impact on the farmers in the South. And so we ran the science, and after dealing with this for over a number of years, and found that yes, in fact, you could and you would not get anywhere near the levels that were considered above safe levels, well, not safe, levels of concern, whatever we called them in milk. And, you know, there's a lot of concern about this. We had, you know, consumer groups that are saying, what are you doing taking this toxin and deliberately feeding it to animals and so on and so forth. There was, but the agency scientists and certainly I felt that it could be done safely. But what it required was the states and FDA feeling that we could manage the corn supply, the entire corn supply in the southern states, and make sure they could test it adequately and channel it to feed, an appropriate feed. And how could it move, you know, in trucks and trains and everything, and get to the right place?
How do you isolate it?
How do you isolate it? How do you control its movement? In any case, we worked, we had meetings with states, we had meetings with the industry, we had meetings with everybody. We tried to see if it was possible and timely, because we were finding out about this kind of late in the program. How long can the corn stay in the elevators? Normally there's a quick turnover. And we had to produce Federal Register documents that were announcing this, allow time for people to comment on and get the program started. So this was a logistical nightmare, but we had gone through this a couple of years previous, where the corn had had to essentially be dumped. And so we went out with the Federal Register document and changed the action levels for feed that was going to specific groups of animals based on what the science we had. And the document was pretty, it was as tight as we could make it science-wise. We explained and gave the legal basis for it in the act that in terms of what we were doing as far as this being an unavoidable contaminant, it could not be avoided by good manufacturing practice, and that we were changing our action levels so that to provide for the safe use of it. And we did that. And I think it was a good thing. It persists to this day. I will mention that. The work that we did back then persists to this day.
Was it?